Would you please tell me your name, the date, the time, and your location?
I am Taya Shear, and today is Wednesday, July 27th, and I am surrounded by beautiful green fabric in a room that is cool, and I am breathing to come more fully into my body as we enter this conversation. I'm so happy to be here.
Do you consent to having this interview recorded, digitally uploaded, and publicly released under a Creative Commons license, attribution, non-commercial, share alike?
Yes.
Thank you so much. Would you please start by introducing yourself to anyone who might find themselves listening? What would you want them to know about you and the place that you're speaking from?
I love this question. I'll share a bit about my work, which is also my passion. I co-founded Kohenet Hebrew Priestess Institute, which is devoted to reclaiming and innovating embodied earth-based models of Jewish feminist spiritual leadership. And I am the host of Jewish Ancestral Healing, a podcast which speaks to and shares conversations with spiritual leaders, artists, activists, and visionaries around ancestral traditions and counter-oppressive practice. I also serve as faculty at Star King School for the Ministry, where I train emergent clergy in organic, multi-religious ritual. And these strands inform my work and my play. I'm also a musician with 5 albums of sacred chant, mostly Hebrew goddess chant. The most recent album is Hebrew and Arabic chants of counter-oppressive devotion. And my projects in the world tend to be around reinvigorating ancient traditions to support connection to what has been in ways that are juicy, alive, and resonant now, and supporting folks in finding connection to places of meaning, power, and possibility within their own traditions, the traditions that either they're from or that draw deeply to them, to help folks make more meaning and find more pleasure, presence, and joy. And so these strands shape my orienting to most things. I also place a really strong value on presence as prayer. This comes from my own orientations of what's possible when we are additionally here in this moment, and honoring our bodies, honoring right pace as a foundation in all the things.
Would you tell me a story about your life during the pandemic?
When pandemic began, I had just moved from my home of 7 years in the Bay Area, preparing to teach around the world before landing in my new home overseas. And I flew away from the Bay again, packed up, leaving after those 7 years. I flew away just as pandemic was beginning to hit the news. There wasn't yet even a question of like, was it safe to fly? But after that first flight, things moved very quickly. And I was somewhere that I had intended to be for 4 days. And in that span of those 4 days, the dominoes dropped. And I think maybe I had, 14 flights canceled, not like the same flight rebooked, but like 14 different flights in the coming months of teaching here, teaching there, teaching here, teaching there, on various continents, dropped, like canceled one by one by one, or actually many of them very fast. And in the span of these few days, I went from like this very careful map of my year, my work, my income, my teaching plan, and also my plan to make a new home in a place that I have been deeply dreaming into. Like it all shifted. And I know this was not unique to me. And just noticing as I remember back to that moment in time, the immense question mark that emerged of like, I thought I knew what was happening and I have no idea what is happening. And my response to that in some ways first was to show up in and with community virtually, because we were all where we each were whenever the dominoes dropped. And I felt drawn to create a series called Priestessing in the Time of Unravel. And we quickly, I invited some of my favorite folks in our priestess community, in our Jewish spiritual community, to teach on what it means to be so deeply in the unknown and how we can resource and cultivate presence and connection as what we have known to be is changing so deeply. And we had this series that was immensely helpful and connective in this time that was so stressful for so many in our community, I'll speak to. And we began to reshape our programs to this point in this particular community, which has an ordination program, a three-year training ordination program, and also has a wider spiritual community and really the movement changing the face of Judaism. We had mostly gathered in person, folks traveling from all over to do that. And as pandemic began, we began to shift our prayer online. And I remember our very first Shabbat prayer service. I guess it was like the third Friday in March 2020. And it was so important to gather. We so desperately, deeply needed to be in community and prayer. And we had no idea that that gathering would turn into weekly Shabbat gatherings from here on out. Now, 2.5 years later, we are still gathering every Shabbat virtually for prayer. And folks who never in our community have had the opportunity to meet because they were a part of different cohorts or lived in different parts of the globe or joined us at different times in our trainings, suddenly got to connect and know each other and became friends. More than friends, became deep, connected community. And at first, during our first layers, we didn't actually advertise or open widely our Shabbat gatherings. Many synagogues were like spreading the word, live streaming, really building very strong membership bases through virtual offerings. And we made a choice to keep our prayer services more intimate. I think that choice lasted for some time. I'm not remembering how many months in, or maybe even longer. We kept it close to those in our community and those in the same space as those in our community. And then we began to widen it little by little and invite folks to join us. And now our community of weekly prayers has folks that have been with us for many years and folks coming new for the first time. And it's been so sweet and potent to build virtual prayer community. And it's also been an immersion for our priestesses, our ritual leaders, in how to create effective virtual ritual, because we are, among other things, a ritual leadership training program. And pre-pandemic, our work focused on how to create potent, meaningful, effective rituals in person. We didn't even say in person because it wasn't like there wasn't a question. It was kind of a given that that's how we were working until pandemic. And then in this time, our people have been crafting skills around offering powerful ritual space through virtual portals. And so that's been something that we've given attention to as well. I'm going to listen here for a moment to see what I'll add. I'll extend the story until now, because we still gather for weekly Shabbatot, and we this past year have faced big questions of how, as a community that pre-pandemic was really rooted in in-person gatherings to create connection and transformation, what do we do now after a year and a half, 2 years of virtual programming? Do we stay online? Do we resume being in person? And there've been really different needs, priorities, and desires within our community. Some folks, for resource reasons or abilities reasons or reasons related to where they are in the world, are thrilled to keep everything virtual because it allows points of connection that wouldn't otherwise be possible. And some folks are yearning to gather in person again. And we're inside now, 2.5 years later, active conversation as we are dreaming into next layers of our training program and the continuity of folks who have been with us or who were with us pre-pandemic of how to well meet the widely varying needs of folks at this time, particularly regarding do we gather virtually, do we gather in person. And I'm remembering a moment, maybe it was a year into pandemic, when folks began to talk about things going back to normal. And it felt so clear to me and my close people that, like, there is no going back to how things were, but there is a listening to what now. How do we, as the moment in the landscape of pandemic is shifting, like how do we create and shape next? And that was a conversation a year into pandemic, and still 2.5 years later, we're in pretty much that same conversation and feeling the possibility and also the dynamic tension. Like, there's some in our circles who are like really excited to go back to how things were. And then there are others, I'm included in the others, who are just like, going back is not a thing, and the forward needs to shape differently than what we were up to before. And how can we weave the best of what was before into what is now and what has emerged as clear through this process of pandemic? And in this moment, so let's say 2.5 years in, we're speaking in July of 2022. I hope I'm doing my math right, but it's 2 years and change. I am like in a particular place where I am much more quarantining still than most folks that I know. I wasn't always. There were like some months for various reasons that I was choosing travel and being out and doing things in outdoor spaces. And for particular reasons right now, I'm close to home and minimizing in-person contact with folks. And it's wild to watch the distinctions around folks' approaches with this by choice, by desire, by necessity, how we're each orienting in this moment when some may be experiencing pandemic as over, some may still be feeling impacts high. And that's really curious. I'm thinking too of the seminary where I teach Star King, which had a really strong virtual presence and distance learning presence pre-pandemic. We had a lot of distance students, and then during pandemic shifted fully online. And what we found, as we have made some attempts as a school to begin to hold some in-person programming again, like that it really wasn't actually optimal. And I've been grateful for my courses at the seminary to continue virtually. And it seems that much of our programming will continue to build virtually. And there are a lot of gifts in that. And there are some losses in that too. Just continuing to be in the weighing of it all. I'm thinking at this moment, in the seasons and in the year, many of us who are Jewish clergy are beginning to look toward the Chagim, the high holidays, the Jewish New Year, and the kind of the pinnacle moments in our prayer year. And during the first autumn of pandemic of 2020, for many, this it was like, can we do this really sacred thing online? In our community, we were like, yes, we were so excited to do it. And many synagogues entered into this world that like had never considered broadcasting over tech in these like high ritual moments. And now it's for many, not all for sure, but for many, it's a given. And now as we are arriving toward high holidays, what we find is in our community, some folks are really wanting to gather in person and some are so excited to be in our online portal. And just seeing folks really weighing how to continue to nourish and nurture virtual community, community that is not rooted in place, but rooted in other points of connection. How to balance that with rooting in in-person community and contact. And so the conversation stays alive here.
I'm curious. The last few years have had so much going on that aren't just the pandemic. I'm wondering, in addition to how COVID-19 was sort of shaping you, what were some of the other issues that were on your mind and heart over the last couple of years?
Listening in here. My response, what arises for me is really actually connected to pandemic, but perhaps more personal, perhaps slightly tangential. What arises for me is the ways that relationships have reshaped when contact is primarily at a distance, and how to build relationships from afar, how to build relationship when there are differing needs around safety. I know for myself, this has been such a continually evolving theme. I wrote an article in the first few weeks of pandemic, Sex in a Time of Physical Distancing, that made some ripples in my communities. I won't quite say it went viral, but it made its way beyond my usual spheres, and it's like a very exciting for many folks template on what's possible in erotic connection, not in person. And like I offered a map of all these possibilities for people to play with, and got really awesome feedback around it. And was like happy and heartened, and like I felt like I had offered a good thing. And as the time unfolded, wow, I really saw how naive I was in a lot of the orientation of my piece, which was seeking to offer like positive possibilities and pleasure in challenging circumstances. And I think what arose for me was more like the impact of the challenging circumstances of building relationship, not just erotic relationship, across distance, and like what happens when we are used to certain kind of contacts in our relationships and don't have that, either seeing families or loved ones much less frequency than before, or not perhaps having to tools that we need to ground. I'm someone who is deeply somatically oriented and very supported by being resourced in my body and the shifts in simple contact, because I was in, for much of the first parts of the pandemic, I was in a pretty isolated quarantine, and just really continued to learn about the capacities of my own system and how to work with them to be more in balance and more well. I'm going to listen in here to see if there's anything else I want to add. I think that's all I'll say on this one.
What are some of the things that brought you to the decision to quarantine in isolation? And then as knowledge changed, as needs changed, how did you discuss needs around safety with others?
The quarantining in isolation is kind of just what happened. I mentioned that I was in transit when the dominoes dropped. And so I landed for, I don't know, a year and a half maybe, somewhere that I had intended to be for 4 days. And made choices. And so I didn't know many people where I was at all. And was also very protective of my health for particular reasons, and really leaned into nature. I was grateful to be somewhere beautiful and let nature become my community. I also was, a huge portion of my work pivoted to online. I'm very, very lucky. I felt very lucky in that way, and things reshaped to be online. And so many hours a day, I was like deep in Zoom land teaching and leading. And so I was like oversaturated with connection through the computer and really leaning into nature and quiet in moments that were not that. And I think conversations shifted for me around like, or my experiences shifted when most folks I knew began to be vaccinated. Conversations opened about traveling to see each other or sharing a meal outside or going for walks outside. And I remember kind of that first emergence, the first comings out, and being totally nervous. My first making my way into the world was like being with someone who wanted to go grocery shopping at a health food store, and I had only gotten food delivered during that first year or whatever it was, and I was so nervous going into this health food store. And it was such a wild experience, because going into health food stores used to be my favorite thing. Like, that was what I would do to ground. And I just remember like having, I won't say I had a panic attack at the register. It wasn't to that degree, but I was so uncomfortable. I pretty much bolted from the store. I think maybe the checker wasn't wearing a mask, and it was hard for me. And as I emerged, I was in a place where, a physical place where, there was a real disparity around how folks were orienting toward vaccines and masks and all the things. And so I remember, like, as I began going in public a little bit more, I remember multiple times being in stores, waiting in line with a mask on, and being harassed by folks without masks on, because I was wearing a mask, and like them arguing with me about the, like, the truth or not of like, does COVID exist? And definitely didn't have me wanting to go indoors to more places, those experiences. I haven't geographically been in many places during this time, but I've been in a couple of very different kinds of physical locations and eventually moved overseas to a place where there was a lot more collective care, not medically, but like there was agreement that this is a thing. There wasn't like, is COVID real? There was like, COVID is real and we are lucky to have vaccines and everyone should wear masks indoors. And it felt really different on my nervous system to be in that kind of a space. Though also a bit more stressful because the medical care available to me in that place would have been very different than in North America. I'm just listening here. And a lot of my community, like I have different pockets of community, some who take great care around precautions for reasons similar to mine or different than mine, some who don't for their various reasons. And for me, it's really ebbed and flowed in terms of my comfort levels and my practices. And in certain places, I hold tight, in other places and more useful around it all. And some of it depends on the time and the surge of COVID. And some of it depends on perhaps how I'm feeling in my body or what my commitments are to the folks that I'm around in terms of safety. I think that my only experiences in my life really until pandemic, having conversations about like negotiating shared physical safety where folks have different ideas about it, like had been around safer sex practice. I hadn't like done things like bungee jumping or other things where maybe like we have to figure out like, do we have the same safety protocols? I don't know. Bungee jumping is probably not the right example, but definitely like the conversations about shared protocols or not. And like, where are our bottom lines? What do we each need? How are we deciding like whose needs take priority here? Like these are kinds of conversations that have become much more normal or normalized. They haven't necessarily become easier. I see in our community, even right now, this week, as we plan a gathering that we're actually still figuring out, will it be in person or virtual? The kinds of conversations that we're having of like what's needed if we are in person, how will we meet the collective needs around precaution and I don't anticipate gathering in person, but I'm very much a part of the conversations where folks who are anticipating or hoping to gather are having those conversations.
Would you share something, an example of what a conversation about boundaries in COVID and safety boundaries in COVID looked like, and then maybe reflecting on how conversations about safer sex pre-pandemic brought you to the kind of conversation you are having now?
When I think about the kind of conversations that are happening in group space around boundaries, we're speaking about things like distance and masks, outdoors versus indoors. We had an experience at our last retreat. I was not there, but where the group had people had tested before arriving, and there were agreements to be only outdoors for the duration of the gathering, except people were sleeping in indoor spaces, but some were sleeping off campus. But in the shared gathering, it was committed to be outdoors. And then And then a weather warning, a severe weather warning came, and it was deemed that the not safeness of being outdoors outweighed the possibly not safeness of being indoors together. And so the leadership team on site made the really challenging but clear call to go inside. And so everyone rapid tested, and they relocated the gathering inside. And this is an example that arises for me. Conversations too that we are having are like, most but not all folks in our community are vaccinated, and navigating how that impacts or doesn't, what testing we require for folks to gather for our group offerings. With friends, it's often questions around distance, masks, no masks. When have you tested last? It feels very similar, as I'm saying it now, to conversations around safer sex, kind of like replacing masks with perhaps like barrier methods of protection, like tests, COVID tests with STI testing, like the conversations around barriers, around testing, around like what have you been up to? I'm thinking COVID wise, like asking people of like their exposure risks recently, similar to safer sex conversations around exposure risks. Like, to me, there are many parallels. And my sense is that many folks, kind of by necessity in pandemic time, have just become more familiar and comfortable with having these kind of conversations around COVID boundaries. And my sense is that in sex positive communities, often there can be a culture of normalization of safer sex conversations, where like these are things that folks perhaps have additional practice or fluency, and not across the board, but where conversations like that are given, there can sometimes be just greater ease and fluency in having them. And I think that one of the things I see in these conversations, particularly I'll say in the COVID boundaries conversations, is like an edge is when the content can get charged or have judgment twinged in. And I feel like it's really been an important learning to like have the conversations clearly and make choices according to like what makes sense, and like trying to find ways to have it be not loaded, not judgy, like just recognizing, okay, this is what it is, and what do we do with what it is? Like if I have X, Y, and Z that I'm coming with, and you have X, Y, and Z that you're coming with in terms of vaccination status, willingness to wear a mask or not, immunocompromised history, recent exposures or not, were you just traveling or at a large event indoors or whatever the thing is, I'm like being able to come to these conversations in the sense of like neutrality, like this is what has been, and then how do we decide what decisions we make given what we're coming with and given what our needs are, and given what, like, is this high risk, is this not high risk, and something that's high risk for one person may not feel as high risk to another person, and these vary for all sorts of reasons, again possibly immunocompromised status or being a caretaker for someone who's immunocompromised, or perhaps someone who has health insurance feels perhaps at slightly less risk than someone who doesn't have access to health care in the same way. Like so many variables go into this, and finding ways to have the conversation that builds bridges and also really respects the boundaries of the folks who really most need their boundaries held well in these moments feels important.
What does the word safety mean to you?
What a great question. I actually want to read something that I just was sent about this. in the Jewish Ancestral Healing podcast, in the first season, I interviewed one of my dear priestess sisters, Yah Yocheved Angelique, and her interview was amazing. She's a Puerto Rican Jewish priestess, activist, healer. And in season two, she interviewed her child, Ari Felix, who's a brilliant astrologer, teacher, activist, star weaver. And in Ari's newsletter that they just sent, they said this. Safety has been established, not because I have thousands of dollars in the bank, I don't, but I will, not because everything's under control, and not because I know exactly what I'm doing and where I'm going. Safety has been established because I realized safety is the sensation of having a supportive, mature, loving relationship with myself, and therefore my reality. Safety has been established because I choose over and over to engage with God / reality as if it loves me. And I saved these words from their newsletter, particularly for this line. Safety has been established because I realized safety is the sensation of having a supportive, mature, loving relationship with myself and therefore with my reality. What I love about this is the self-referentiality in it, the like finding center within and letting ourselves not be thrown or skewed or overly shaped by the influences around us, and really cultivating a sovereignty with interconnectedness that allows us to be home inside of ourselves. And I say this in no way diminishing like very real needs around safety, physically, justicely, like in no way, like if I'm saying this within the context of the need to support countering oppressions, like for safety for all beings, like that are needs are met for food, shelter, thrive, healthcare, living in a space that is not demonizing because of color, culture, class, ability. And I'm excited to highlight this piece here that Ari speaks to, which again for me is about sovereignty and the capacity for self-referencing. Because I think that it can be easy, particularly in moments of crisis, to catch false urgency and perhaps not always be able to distinguish it from real urgency. And this is something that I saw throughout pandemic, is like what happens when our collective nervous system is totally fried? What happens when we are in collective overwhelm, and when like the trauma feedback loop continues to cycle, and like maybe I've found calm, but then I talk to someone who's really overwhelmed, and like, how do I stay regulated in the face of extreme dysregulation? And building capacity for center, which for me kind of begins with rooting in positive resource, finding, giving attention to what is most well in the body, in the energy body, in the community body, in the ancestral body, is the pathway to healing. I studied, trained as, and practiced a modality called somatic experiencing, which is a body awareness-based trauma healing modality, which teaches that trauma doesn't heal by focusing first on the places of fragment or distress, but rather trauma heals by focusing on wellness, by building capacity to give attention to what is well, and to letting overflow come from there, to touch the places, inform the places, to kind of bring up the places By bring up, I mean to attune the places of distress to something of greater coherence. And over again, I've seen pandemic times as really like a boot camp or a master's class, however you want to call it, in navigating our individual and collective nervous system more well, like how to understand what's going on in our systems and regulate in ways that allow space for resourcing, for deep breath, for care of body and mind and spirit, and not letting overwhelm or overload nosedive us. For so many folks in my communities, like I've just seen over and over us be way too stretched and trying to both regulate ourselves well, resource ourselves well, and also show up for each other well. And I feel like it's almost been like a constant baton passing of like, okay, who has more spoons? Who has more capacity today to tend this? And in my Kohenet community, our leadership team really spent the first years of pandemic, both personally and organizationally, in a lot of overdrive. And whoever had like a little bit of extra in any given day would kick in to do the thing. And really working now to reshape toward greater sustainability. And I feel like it's come to a point where like it's not tenable to run on fumes. I mean, it never is, but really at this point, looking towards sustainability is deeply connected also to safety. Like, how can we be living in ways that nurture and nourish ourselves and each other, our communities and this world, physically, emotionally, spiritually, and so to me these all weave in to what it means to be safe, like to not only be safe but to build a nervous system that allows ourselves to know when we are safe and when we aren't, like, to dismantle entrained hypervigilance so that when we actually need to be hypervigilant we can act, and when it's not that moment, we can let ourselves rest because that rest is needed, period, like for its own sake. And it's also needed to be able to act again.
How are you feeling about the immediate future?
So much unknown. And I am finding that like the folks living in that with me, I am able to connect with more easily, like the returning to what was, or like the like making plans. I don't know how to do either of those things right now. And so how I'm feeling about the immediate future kind of connects to how I'm relating to it, which is like doing my best to just like show up each day, tending well, really, really doing what I can to show up inside of the practices that support me, doing my best to prioritize where I'm placing my attention and my devotion, my care, my resource. I have a lot of curiosity, a lot of confusion. I tend toward gratitude and optimism to certain degrees. I love orienting toward optimal possibility. And I don't totally see that now. I don't see not that. I think I feel very much in the immediate. Like, I don't feel like I can see so far ahead. Like people are asking me to commit to things for next year. And I'm like, like, I don't know how to have that conversation. Like, will I teach this thing a year from now? Like, okay, that presumes a lot of things that I don't feel able to presume. And even if I could presume them, my desire isn't to project in that way. It doesn't feel generative. Yes to dreaming, a little bit less yes for me to planning. I feel very much right here, right now, and very much in prayer.
What is something you've been grateful for over the last couple of years?
I'm grateful for ways that this time has helped me become yet even more clear about what matters most to me. I haven't always known how to show up for that as well as I would like. I'm still learning. I feel grateful for the circle of close ones that support me. I feel grateful for work when I've had it. I feel grateful for creative inspiration. The podcast, Jewish Ancestral Healing, which has now listeners in 67 countries and thousands of downloads per episode and has raised amazing conversations. It's like been so well met, or people have named being so well met by it. Like the acclaim has been like, what, I've been wowed by it. That did not exist pre-pandemic. It's like, it's an idea that arose in the empty space of like, what am I gonna do now? What's needed now? And I'm so grateful for new possibilities and forms arising. I felt so excited to have conversations with people that I love and respect and who have such brilliant work. And I wasn't getting to have those conversations in person with them. And rather than just making a bunch of phone dates, I was like, let's broadcast this. And so like that inspiration and the form that has emerged from that, I'm really grateful for that arising and feeling that as we're beginning to work on season 3 now. I'm grateful for being alive. I remember distinctly feeling at the beginning of pandemic, like, I don't know if I will emerge from this alive. And I don't feel that we're out of pandemic yet. So I can't say I will emerge from this alive. And I'm grateful to be alive right now. So grateful to be alive right now.
I'd like you to imagine speaking to a historian in the future, someone far enough away that they have no lived experience of this moment. What would you ask them? What would you tell them cannot be forgotten about this moment that we're going through?
Adaptability is everything. I think of Octavia Butler's brilliant book, Parable of the Sower, and her teaching, God is change. I remember reading that for the first time 20, 25 years ago, and the way that it totally transformed and shaped me, and how much this period has felt like a lived experience to some degree of that story, not in every way, but like a reminder to not presume we know anything about anything, to be curious, to be adaptable. My wish for them, if they're like looking back at us, would be like compassion. Like, have compassion for us. Like, we were doing the best that we can or that we could. And I feel like that's something that has a theme that's arisen over and over in this time, is like, wow, in a mess of circumstances, like, we're doing the best that we can. And so I think I would invite a remembering of adaptability and orientation of compassion, and also I would ask them to like protect each other more well, to take care of each other more well. I feel like we've learned a lot collectively about how to meet those most vulnerable. And sometimes that has happened well in this time, and sometimes it's not happened in this time. And so I would ask to that the care for the vulnerable be remember the truth of interconnectedness of the impacts that one has on the collective. It feels paramount, and like finding a balance of like sovereignty and interconnection that is really at the heart of it all.
I want to thank you so very much for the generosity of time and the thoughtful beauty of your answers. Those are all of the questions I know how to ask at this moment. So right now, I'd just like to open some space. If there's anything you want to share that you haven't had the chance to yet, please take some space and share it.
I feel so grateful for the invitation into this conversation, Kit, and the archive holders. I have thought a lot about many of the things that I shared, and other strands have arisen in this moment because of this space and the questions asked. And it's a joy and of meaning to me to hear what emerges as I continue to make meaning of this time. I'm also aware my academic training decades ago is as a folklorist, and I've done archival work of various kinds over the years. And now in some ways the podcast is kind of archive-ish, though we don't think of ourselves as an archive. We're like more like conversations toward creating change. But what I'm aware of is I'm often in a teaching seat, but I'm approaching this conversation of archive. I felt nervous, like, I don't know. I don't want to be fixed in time. I don't know how I feel about this. And that in itself has been a really, I don't know if enjoyable is the right word, but I felt curiosity around what has arisen for me preparing to speak in this context. And I found that the reality, the actuality, my experience of speaking in this context with you in this moment has been such a joy and really an useful blessing. And I'm grateful for the care given to call forth and preserve stories from this moment. And I'm grateful for the container inside of which my words can perhaps be not only toward remembering, also toward prayer. I'm thinking of the practice of remembering, which both in Judaism and also particularly in Islamic Sufism, the practice of dhikr or remembrance is a primary way to pray. And I feel grateful to be in remembering and translating experience and sharing words and energies with you here as a way of prayer. And I'll close in prayer, just asking that this sharing here be for good, that anything that doesn't serve compost with ease and grace, and that what has emerged from me in this conversation with Kit in this archive and whatever arises for you listening whenever and wherever you do, be for a blessing, that this offering be deeply blessed and a blessing in your life and community, that it be a blessing in our lives, our communities, and in this world toward collective liberation. And I offer great thanks to the loving and wise ancestors who guide, bless, and support me, who guide, bless, and support us, and offer great appreciation for the more than human world that is our kin, and the creature teachers and the plant ancestors and the elements. And I give great respect too to the first peoples of the places where we each are, the ones whose bodies are these lands. And with such great gratitude to the weaver and weaving of all the pulsing presence, the source of life and its cycling, for the many millions of miracles that have gone into this moment coming into being. May it be so that this is a blessing. Thank you.
Thank you.